All right. Yeah, BLT, very underrated, I would argue, as a sandwich.
Yeah, it takes an extra, you know, probably 5 to 7 minutes to fry up the bacon. So I understand if you're under a time restraint, it's probably not your go-to sandwich. But man, with a fresh tomato from the garden, I literally went outside, picked the best-looking tomato, sliced it up. Amazing.
Could I argue that the boom in popularity of the avocado is what has most negatively influenced the popularity of the BLT?
I could
because you're not going to put avocado in a BLT, I don't think, very often. So the avocado's presence leads you in a number of different directions, especially this time of year when you would typically go BLT. Am I wrong here?
Well, some delis do the avocado BLT.
Oh.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if those two would really go together for me, although I like a salty avocado, which is basically what you would be having. But I'm more, if I'm putting avocado on a sandwich, it's a turkey and Swiss. Man, that is good.
Oh, I could go for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. coming up later in the show, the Power Poll, top five influences that work negatively against the BLT. We'll get to that. We'll get to some basketball news. Good news for Tennessee. I would say great news for Tennessee basketball. Yesterday, with Eve Pons deciding to stay at Tennessee, we're going to talk to Tennessee assistant basketball coach Mike Schwartz coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Joe Rexroad from The Athletic stops by at 12:30. Jay Busby from Yahoo at 2:30. We're loaded up. We'll get your reaction, 656-9900, if you'd like to join us. At Sports180 is where you can find us on the social media channels as we take a look around the sports world.
The biggest news, the main stories, the headlines that have everyone talking. It's time to take a look around the sports world.
So Eve Pons is back with the deadline yesterday for players to decide whether to stay in the draft or return to college. Eve made the decision yesterday afternoon that he will stay at Tennessee, and everybody's talked about, I think, the positive news that that is for Tennessee. And for Pons, it's a chance to improve his draft stock, come back and play on a really good team, help lead that team. There are so many different reasons, Heather, that this is good news for Tennessee to have Eve Pons back.
A lot of upside with this news. It is truly incredible. Tennessee, across the board, is a consensus top 15 team with Eve Pons saying he's coming back. And the fact that you're going to see him keep developing, I think he made a hard decision, no doubt, that he wants to make it to the NBA, so it might have been hard for him to come back. But just have a normal season and then get to go through the entire NBA draft process, I just feel like that is going to be leaps and bounds better than where he could have gotten drafted just after this year.
So good news for Tennessee. I think that's good news for the SEC. SEC basketball became better, not only with Pond's decision, but Joel Silverberg. There was news from other schools. John Petty, I think, had his announcement during our show yesterday, and then LSU getting some players back as well. SEC basketball got deeper, more talented. Makes the challenge to win the conference, I guess, harder, but also the conference is going to help itself in trying to get to the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, South Carolina and Missouri had key players announced last week that they were coming back. Konzo Martin's going to have 11 players that are either juniors or seniors on his roster this upcoming year. That's more than any other Power 5 school, but you're right. LSU, Javonte Smart, Darius Days, and Trendon Watford. And then Arkansas also getting Isaiah Joe back as well. So a lot of SEC schools have gotten some key talent coming back for this year.
I'm surprised that LSU had such stronger offers than like the NBA. I'm kind of surprised by that.
The joke that keeps on giving there with Mr. Will Wade. Check out Joel's Behind the Arc podcast as well. Good basketball resource for you as we'll continue the conversation around Pond's decision for sure this afternoon. The new Monday Night Football booth for the NFL, Heather, is in place. I like it. Levy, Greasy, and Lewis Riddick, I think they're going to be a good trio, and I'm looking forward to seeing. I think it'll be an improvement from where they've been the last couple of years, honestly. And Levy's a guy that I was talking about back around the XFL season of, hey, he's getting to showcase a little bit more what he can do with football. So I like the trio. I'm sure they'll get ripped apart on Twitter at some point this upcoming season, but I like it.
Yeah, probably during the first game, week one. But no, I think it's really cool. I'm still not a huge fan of the three-man booth, but that's what Monday Night Football is going to do, so more power to them. I love the Levy pick. I love the Riddick pick. And the story behind Lewis Riddick's ascension at ESPN started out as a day-to-day player where he had like a daily rate. If he was on so many shows, he got paid like $800 or something like that a day. And now has risen up to the ranks of Monday Night Football booth broadcaster. I just think that story is incredible. I think he's going to bring so much to the table. I was actually kind of surprised by the Brian Griese pick because all accounts, like all summer long, ESPN was targeting Dan Orlovsky. So I was kind of surprised that Griese was in there and not Orlovsky.
Yeah, and with Riddick, he's the kind of guy where if he happens to express an opinion that I already share, I double down because I feel like my opinion is more likely to be right if Lewis Riddick is on that side. Steve Levy's been with ESPN since 93.
Yeah.
He's a kind of an ESPN lifer, so I'm glad to see him get that kind of opportunity with ESPN and Monday Night Football. We have another conference with another decision. The Big 12 is going with a 9+1 schedule, and last week it was Oklahoma announcing that it had been granted the waiver to move up its season opener to August 29th. And word is coming out with Oklahoma and Kansas that, yeah, they're not probably going to play on August 29th. That's close, by the way. It's August 4th. I almost forgot that we had entered August. So you're looking at 3 weeks from this upcoming Saturday when those games are scheduled to be played. Probably won't happen, but the Big 12, after the Big 10, Pac-12, and SEC announced we're not going to play non-conference games, the Big 12 is going more of the ACC route to try to play one non-conference game this fall.
Yeah, so will we see Big 12 ACC matchups, since those are the only two Power Fives, you know, that still are keeping those doors open? I don't know what they're going to do. But, you know, everybody has gone their own path. Everybody's got to walk their own path, and we'll see what happens. I mean, the fact that Oklahoma could have, I have not read if they did or not, but they could have opened fall camp last Saturday with the August 29th timeline they were initially shooting for. So that's just wild that we're finally here in this target start zone of people are going to be starting up fall camps over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and one issue with trying to do Big 12 ACC is the Big 12 is saying, okay, we'll do non-conference games, but they all have to be at Big 12 stadiums.
Okay,
I doubt
yeah,
the ACC so is going to say, yeah, we're all going there. So you find somebody that will be willing to come there if it works out that way.
Yeah, the ACC has actually said you have to be in the home state of the school to even be considered to play. Yeah.
And Oklahoma has started its fall camp, so they're up and running as they've actually dealt with some injury issues. But yeah, it's a weird time. Like this is opening camp week, and schools are still trying to figure out, okay, when are we actually playing games? What do the next few weeks look like? It does buy time to get players ready, guys that were either out during the offseason with injury or newcomers who just arrived on campus during the summer, a little extra time to prepare for the season with schedules being pushed back.
It's also just really weird because we didn't have our kickoff, which is SEC Football Media Days. You know, I mean, everybody is still just in this kind of no man's land desert of, does time really exist? What is time? Because everybody's on such a different schedule right now, and you didn't have your big lead-in with the different conference media days.
Time does keep on ticking into the future, though. Rashad Bateman has decided to go ahead and focus on his future. The wide receiver from Minnesota announced earlier today he's opting out of the season and declaring for the 2021 draft. He was first team All-Big Ten last year, a preseason All-American heading into this year, and he has decided to not play for Minnesota and instead focus on the NFL draft.
Not shocked by this news. You're going to see more of this. One thing that came out...
Yeah, Caleb Farley, a corner at Virginia Tech, is a player of similar caliber talent and making the same decision to not play this fall.
One thing that came out last week while you were on vacation, Wisconsin was picked over Minnesota to represent that division in the Big Ten Championship. Was that the right move, or as you see it picked by the media? Ohio State was the other division winner.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, especially now if you take a big-time playmaker off the field for Minnesota. That's one that stings, no doubt, for the Gophers. This one is tough. Mike Soroka with a torn Achilles last night in the Braves' loss against the New York Mets. Soroka's their ace, big-time talent, and he's lost for the year. And it's, you know, you think, okay, well, he goes down early in the season. It's early in the season in August, so this will be a long one to come back from.
Very long one to come back from. And I hate this for your team because I'm sure that it has now adjusted your win total and your expectations for the team. And the fact that it does not only hamper one season. You know, it's hard enough to come back from an Achilles tear. And like you said, maybe he's back in the rotation if the Braves are making a playoff push at the end of next summer or maybe even in September. I mean, it's just really tough news for your team and for him. And the video just looked so painful. That was a hard one to watch.
It's a bummer, no doubt. NBA and NHL play continues today. The Lakers clinch the one seed in the West. Jill Silverberg, the Grizzlies lose again. It's a team that had more success against non-bubble teams. It struggled against teams that are down there in the bubble, which are higher quality. So we'll see how this playoff race shakes out. But the Grizzlies are 0-4 so far in the bubble down in Orlando.
Yeah, a couple of tough losses to start out, and then losing by 10 to the Pelicans last night. And John Morant just having a terrible night shooting from the field. Jaren Jackson having to do a little bit more. So hopefully they can get something churning for their sake anyway. Still trying to hold on to that 8th seed in the postseason.
What stands out about what's happened so far with the NHL?
Well, seen a couple hat tricks already. I thought it was great last night. You had the Oilers with Connor McDavid scoring a hat trick. And since there's no fans in the stands, the Oilers had a designated staffer to throw hats onto the ice as if they were anticipating him to have a big night. So a couple of good series so far. Only one that is at a 2-0 series lead one way or the other. So we're seeing a lot of competitive games. You've seen high-profile teams that are not playing round-robin games right now that are kind of having to really work their way through this best-of-five series to advance to the next round, and hopefully the Predators can pull something out today against Arizona.
Yeah, Panthers and Islanders just started a couple of minutes ago, so we'll have some updates on scores for you with hockey already started up. The NBA will play at 1:30 this afternoon. Daytime sports, let's do it. Minnesota and Pittsburgh in Major League Baseball will start up at 2 o'clock on ESPN. That is a look around the sports world. Sports, they're happening.
Does day drinking now go along with day sports, since, you know, everybody's kind of blended and blurred the lines of work from home?
Well, I'm a week removed from coming off a week at the beach, so sure. Yeah, fire them up.
You're like, oh, I'll have a drink with lunch. That's no problem.
Yeah, if you got one baseball of those Zoom calls, though, be careful.
Yeah, make sure you mute that microphone, guys. Mute that microphone. It can get embarrassing if you don't.
Yeah, some of the smart kids out there, what they figured out to do, not that I'm recommending this for any kids that are listening that might be doing some virtual learning, but to set up a background that shows you moving, and the teacher can think that you're there when you've actually gotten up and left.
How very Ferris Bueller of you.
Well, it's not me. I would never stoop to something like that. We'll continue here on Sports 180. Eve Pons is back at Tennessee. It's big news for the Vols. We'll continue that conversation. Joe Rexroad of The Athletic joins us 15 minutes from right now as we continue on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Download the WNML app. You can listen on the go anytime. Find us online at 991thesportsanimal.com. Joe Rexroad will join us coming up at 12:30. We'll get his reaction to the Eve Pons news, as well as the NFL working to get started. There's also news of cap relief that will be coming for teams with players opting out in the NFL. That's something to continue to monitor here for the next few days, as there will be more that decide to opt out. That's going to happen in the NFL. It's going to happen in college football. But the games will also go on, or at least they're going to put forth every effort they can to move on.
One thing that also we talked about last week I want to get your opinion on is the cap floor that the NFL announced. They said they're going to try, if they take a big, you know, hit to revenue, which is obviously going to come, they're going to try and spread out the pain maybe over the next couple of years so that the cap would not dip down below $175 million. So that is going to be the at least cap floor. That's the lowest it'll go over the next several years. Do you think that was a good move that the NFL came out and announced that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something they have to do, right? I don't. What would the other option be? You've got to have a floor there so that teams don't just completely tank out their cap.
Well, yeah, that's what.
Or their entire salary roster, roster.
Yeah, I had not factored in them putting in a floor, like it will not dip below this level. I didn't know if they would wait and assess and see what happened, and then it could be a significant cap hit. I don't know. I wasn't sure what to anticipate in that regard. And when they went ahead and made that announcement, they're like, we'll just, you know, spread the damage over the next couple of years and try to make it back. But because, you know, especially like in regards to my Cowboys, look at how much money they have spent this offseason. If they were to have a huge cap hit, that could be so detrimental to the progress that they've been building to this point. So, of course, I was, like, totally just in it for myself, you know, that news.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, don't the Cowboys still have one player on the roster to figure out a contract situation for the long term? Is there anybody that they've been working on that for the last, feels like, 15 years? Dak, that's right, the quarterback. That's a story that I can't wait for that one to end, whenever it does, with your Dallas Cowboys. Of course, it being Dallas, it gets a little more attention. So that'll be just something to pay attention to, players' decisions that they have to make, especially in the NFL over the next few days. Washington State's coach put out a statement to try to clarify his conversation that was recorded. I can't keep up with some of these stories, and I'm not even kidding, especially traveling over the last few days. I got home, I told you, and I was trying to keep up with the Pac-12 letter, what was going on at Washington State from the recording of the tape to what was being reported by different outlets, but Washington State's coach talking about a player opting out and other players' status on the team being in question. It is legitimately difficult to keep up with each conference handling things differently as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just wild, and especially if you're coming off a vacation like you were, a long drive, you have laundry that you got to get done. Like, you're still kind of in vacation mode and transitioning, and then opening up your Twitter timeline, you're like, what the heck is this? I mean, I was caught off guard by the Pac-12 news, and, you know, I had stayed kind of dialed into the sports world over the weekend, and I was like, are you kidding me? Where is this coming from? So, yeah. It's just a lot. Everything is moving in such weird directions this year. I'm definitely not pro audio taping or videotaping someone without their knowledge. I think there's definitely a morality question there. But, man, it's just a rat's nest right now, all in college football. We kind of said it off the air yesterday, like, if college football was going to take a year off and maybe just hit the reset button, get some things ironed out, straightened out, honestly, it might not be a bad time to just go ahead and do that.
Yeah, hopefully they can play some games in the meantime. In more positive news, as we open the show with, Eve Ponce is staying at Tennessee, which is not surprising news. It's just really good news for Tennessee for him to be back. And I think when you look at Tennessee's roster, it's the deepest Rick Barnes has had in terms of the amount of players they're going to be able to count on. I think it's arguably the most talented roster he's had in terms of how many players could very soon be in the NBA. I mean, they could have four guys easily drafted next year, right? And last year was a huge deal when they had three. So when you look at Josiah Jordan James, Eve Ponce now coming back, and then Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, both will be projected for the draft this upcoming spring. I'm not wrong there, right? Tennessee could have four guys drafted in this upcoming NBA draft. And other players that they're going to have some opportunities professionally, no doubt. Vescovi, Fulkerson, Victor Bailey.
Yeah.
And then some young players like Corey Walker's a freshman. We'll see for the future. But talent and depth, I think this is the best roster Rick Barnes has had. We'll see what that means on the court. But in terms of a makeup of a roster, and Anasicki joining it adds more experience as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, we saw how Eve Ponds was kind of, and even John Fulkerson last year, they were these two guys that you didn't quite know what they were going to bring you night in and night out when the season started, and then very much they turned into power players throughout the season and guys that were heavily dependent on. Could that be also a role that's fulfilled by, we don't know exactly what Victor Bailey Jr. is going to bring to the table, but by all accounts, I mean, several players, even Josiah James, has called this guy a secret weapon. He might be one of the biggest threats that's going to hit college basketball that people don't even know is coming. I mean, so when you start hearing stuff like that, you're like, okay, well, if Ponce and Fulkerson were kind of those guys that were under the radar last year that hit the scene, who could even those under-the-radar guys be? And Victor and even Anasicki could fill those roles. I mean, it's really an interesting team to break down person by person.
Yeah, Joel Silverberg, if you take Tennessee's roster and look at the amount of experience now that is there with guys returning, as well as Bailey, who set out last year with Tennessee, but he's played in the Pac-12 at Oregon. Anasicki, entering his senior year, he's played at a quote, lower level at Sacred Heart, but he's played a lot of college basketball at this point. The amount of experience Tennessee has on its roster this year compared to last year is night and day.
Oh, without a doubt. And not only do you have that experience, but you add in a blend of young talent with the recruiting class that you have, so you can... Yep. You can have a lot to work with, especially in the backcourt, without having to rely on those freshmen as much. Josiah Jordan James should be healthy. Santiago Vescovi should have a full offseason under his belt. Victor Bailey Jr. has been in the system for a year, so you're taking a lot of pressure off of Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. And then in the front court, with Pons coming back, you take a lot of pressure off Corey Walker, too.
Yeah, versatility within the lineup. There are just so many reasons that this is good news for Tennessee, Heather.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And the fact that there was, I thought, so much pressure on Josiah Jordan-James, like, from the jump last year, he never really got the opportunity to sort of, you know, figure out his role and develop. And then he had the injury that set him back as well and was never 100% for the rest of the season. But like Joel just said, with these other guys that have a ton of experience, is that going to alleviate some of that pressure on Keon, on Springer, that could then just let them sort of blossom in a natural, you know, a natural rhythm instead of having so much pressure on them from the get-go?
Yeah, James is a guy that I really think he still can be a terrific player for Tennessee. One, just because of his talent, his maturity. And he was injured before the season, so he's never 100%. And then you have the Lamonte Turner injury that keeps him from being able to finish the season. So James' role immediately changed. And there was so much on him to try to do. That will be different this year. So the roster top to bottom is much improved. The experience is much different than it was a year ago. Expectations will be much higher as well. They recognize that, but that's part of the reason maybe Eve Pons came back. We'll talk to Mike Schwartz about that at 2 o'clock this afternoon, Tennessee's assistant basketball coach. We'll talk to him about what Pons can do, can add to his game as well. Coming up next, we'll talk to Joe Rexroad of TheAthletic.com. Some Tennessee basketball thoughts with him, some NFL. Coming up next on Sports 180, Joel Silverberg has a Midday Sports Minute for you. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. You're listening to FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thank you for being with us this afternoon. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Joel Silverberg with us as well. And we are pleased to go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And welcome to the show, Joe Rexroad from TheAthletic.com. Joe, we appreciate the time as always. And a lot of what we talked about here in the first half hour of the show is the news yesterday that Eve Pons is coming back to Tennessee. What did you think of that news and maybe the potential that it creates for Tennessee basketball this upcoming year?
Huge news to me, guys, and came down to the wire, maybe a little false start in there, and finally got the news that he's coming back. You know, I guess my initial thought when he entered his name was it makes sense. Go see how you match up and everything, and obviously things changed on that front. But, I mean, I believe that Pons is an NBA athlete, and I think he took a huge step as a basketball player last year. But it does feel like one more year is what he needs, get better with the ball, be a little bit more of a creator at the four. I just think that Pons Fulkerson 4-5 is such a unique combination. And then you think about the talent coming in, what Vescovi could be in his second year after really an unbelievable performance on short notice. And then the guy I think probably people won't talk about enough is Josiah James, who was hurt last year. And I think is going to be a much different player this year. I mean, I think this is a top 10 caliber team. I think it's the best team on paper in the SEC and a team that can realistically get after a Final Four.
Wow. And I know that it takes some luck to kind of get to a Final Four and a good draw in the tournament, but that is a realistic, you know, goal, I think, for this team, like you point out, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's you're right, Heather. First of all, luck, and I mean, look, 2 years ago, that team was absolutely good enough and, you know, had a bad few minutes early against Purdue and then watched Ryan Klein hit, you know, 30-footers and still almost won that game in the Sweet 16. But, you know, it's hard, you know, I mean, you have to be careful, obviously, and I'm thinking especially about Jaden Springer coming in, you know, to put too much on freshmen. But, look, this is one of the most, if not the most celebrated classes in Tennessee basketball history coming in. You know, Victor Bailey is someone, too, you hear people talk a lot about, Oregon transfer, who I think is going to matter. I think the depth is there. The talent is there. You know, we still, I think, have to see, you know, on front court depth a little bit. But, you know, look at what Fulkerson became last year. He became so confident later in the season that he was either going to score or get fouled, or you better double him. I mean, look at what Kentucky had to look what he did up in Rupp Arena. I mean, there's just a lot of growth last year from some guys who now are coming back and are going to be key pieces. You don't want to put too much on the freshman because I still think that they have got to be a big part of that. And so we still don't know until we see them. But, you know, there's a certain level of reliability, you know, in basketball recruiting that you don't have in football recruiting. You know, I think those guys are going to come in and be good players, and then we'll see if they can be, you know, outstanding players. That's probably what it would take.
We're talking to Joe Rexroad from TheAthletic.com on Twitter, at Joe Rexroad. What has the last week been like since NFL training camps opened up, especially there in Nashville with the Titans?
Well, it doesn't feel at all like that. You know, I mean, right now there's testing and there's still people opting out, and we're doing just, you know, a couple Zoom calls a week. You know, even usually by now it's like you're out there every day, you're watching practice. Poor Mike Vrabel has to talk every day, which, you know, gets irritating for him. Now he's got the nice, cushy one Zoom a week deal going, and, you know, a couple Zooms with players. It's just so different, and it's going to take them a while to ramp up. The first practice will be a week from Friday, so the 14th will be the first time that we're allowed into the facility to watch them do stuff, and that's basically when they'll start doing football stuff. And I think pads go on April. Feels like, hey, who knows what month it is? August 17th when the pads go on. So, yeah, so far it's just, I mean, obviously right now around Titans camp, the big storyline is Vic Beasley still hasn't reported. At first it was unexcused. Now it's excused, but he still hasn't reported. And so the opt-out date, it has been reported, will be 3 p.m. Thursday. That was supposed to be a week after they signed the CBA, but the NFLPA agreed to make it a hard deadline of Thursday. So we'll know who's in and who's out in the NFL season. And, you know, as each day passes, you just start to assume that maybe considering an opt-out is part of what's going on with Vic Beasley and that he won't be part of this team. And if that's the case, that's their biggest free agent signing. That was an attempt to address their biggest weakness, which is pass rush. So, one, it would be a huge hit to them. Two, it would make a pursuit of Jadeveon Clowney almost desperate at that point.
Joe, when you look at who all is reported, how the Titans are conducting everything, and I know that you don't have a lot of transparency to see what's going on behind closed doors, but do you feel like there is anybody that was maybe hesitant to report to camp, has reported, and now is considering or mulling opting out for the season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of anyone. You know, a couple players actually who just had babies spoke yesterday. Taylor Lewan, his wife just had a baby, and Kevin Byard's wife is due any day now, he said. And both of them were pretty, you know, adamant that, you know, they talked about all the options, but they were all in on playing. So, like, I would not be surprised if another name or two pops up between now and the opt-out date, you know. But at this point, there's only been one player, and that was an undrafted offensive lineman, Anthony McKinney from TCU. Again, Vic Beasley, don't know everything going on with him. I mean, it may not be COVID-related at all, but it sure feels like he's debating playing for whatever reason this year, which again would be crushing for the Titans. But there's been some big names out there. Of course, the Patriots have had a lot of names, and I think before this week's over, we'll see some other significant names in this league deciding not to play.
Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe, have you gotten any sense from Mike Vrabel or anyone else hearing what they've said around the league, just how different this preseason will be, how it might affect them once they get the regular season going?
Well, I think around here in particular, the practices are going to be very physical relative to how they usually are. And, of course, you know, some of that has been collectively bargained in terms of less, you know, contact practices and all that stuff. But whatever the Titans have available to them, they are going to try to be as game-like as possible because there's no preseason games. And I'm sure that that's going to be the case for most, if not all, the other teams. I mean, you've got to First of all, if you want to cut from 80 to 53, you've got to see some people in as many situations as possible. Like Mike Vrabel said, they've got a rookie, Darrington Evans, they drafted in the third round. He's going to be the third down back, likely. He's going to be Derrick Henry's backup. He's a guy who's going to be important this year. And Vrabel said, like, I don't want the first time he gets tackled for real, you know, to be in that Denver game on Monday Night Football. Like, he's got to get tackled, you know? He's got to hold on to the ball against NFL players tackling him. So some things that you just knew would take place with these preseason games, there's a certain level of, you know, reliability with being able to evaluate everyone and get people ready. That's all gone. So that is one change for sure. They are going – the practices – with preseason games, very few of them really that physical. A lot of walkthrough stuff and a lot of sort of half, you know, obviously you're trying to keep everybody safe. I think the Titans are going to have some old school, I don't know if they're going to have like bowl in the ring, Oklahoma drill stuff, but, you know, but they're going to get after each other a little bit.
Hey, Joe, do you anticipate there, especially when you can factor in everything that's happened in Major League Baseball with the different postponements and things like that in regards to some teams, but do you anticipate there being any sort of revamping or retooling of the NFL schedule to this point to try and keep maybe teams more regionalized, or do you foresee any changes?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think someone on CBS had an interesting kind of regional schedule idea today, and it's not a bad idea. I don't think it'll happen. I mean, I think there were a few things that they could have done. You know, Taylor Lewan, I asked him about this yesterday because he tweeted a couple weeks ago about how there should be a bubble initiative, and, you know, how much he'd be all in on that, and he thinks it would make a big difference. And as we've seen in sports, guys, bubble good, no bubble bad so far. I think you could make a case for trying to have some sort of regional bubbles, put a few teams in it. Now, you know, then you still – how do you play a full season, all that? I mean, you got to get creative. But, I mean, at this point, as we stand, you know, what, 5 weeks from the start of the season? I think I'd be shocked if they, you know, did something like that. I mean, I think they're locked in on this regular season. And I think there's a real chance that we see – obviously, we're seeing all these MLB games canceled left and right. Now, that's a very different sport. They travel all the time. I think there are some risks in baseball that you won't have with one game a week in football, but I would not be surprised at all if you've got, you know, an NFL team that played 13 games and one that played 15 games, and, you know, like, I just don't know if they're going to be able to, if they have outbreaks, you know, quickly go replacement player all over the place and still put on some of these games. But I believe they're going to press forward with this just normal, traditional schedule.
So you're not ready to guarantee a start and complete finish of the college football season this fall, Joe?
I'll just do it, Joe. We won't hold it against you.
put me down for 100% confidence. Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. I tell you what, I mean, the Big Ten alone, just look at this week. You've got Northwestern doubled to, what, 20? Oh, for one dorm party, they got like 28 cases. An Indiana player has serious stuff from COVID that his mom posted, all really scary stuff. Minnesota's best receiver just opted out. There's a couple more in there that I forget, but just that league, you know, where, you know, in some of that parts of that league, it's really, the virus isn't all that bad. So, man, students starting coming back. I mean, look, I'm just fascinated to see how it will all play out, but man, it is so complicated and so sticky.
Yep, 2020, that's where we are. Read Joe's work, theathletic.com. Keep up with what's going on with the Predators and the NHL, having started back up as well, on Twitter, at Joe Rexrow. Joe, we appreciate the time each week. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys, thanks so much for having me. See you later.
Joe Rexrode from TheAthletic.com joining us here on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline.
And I like the fact that Joe, he is, for the most part, he has stayed on the higher confidence meter. I mean, not like he's, you know, near 100%, like he said, but he thinks that everything is going to start, but he's kind of also hitting that point where you're like, but I didn't say it was going to finish. So right. I appreciate that from Joe.
On we go here on Sports 180. We'll hit the face-off coming up.
He's also teased all of his buddies that only cover the NFL for, like, The Athletic. He's like, oh, get ready, guys, because this is what we have been dealing with, the media policies that are now in place in the NFL. He's like, this is what college writers have been complaining about for years. So the NFL writers also getting a little bit of a shock at not having a lot of access.
Yeah, still waiting on Butch Jones to open up a scrimmage for us to watch after Patrick Brown caught that punt.
Shout out
when
to
challenged
Brown.
By Butch Jones.
Yeah, he caught it like a boss too. He almost like one.
Oh, he sure
it.
Did.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was awesome. And
yeah,
then,
Patrick Brown, sneaky athletic.
Yeah, and then the fact that Butch totally reversed course, that just goes to show Butch had no confidence in Patrick, and Patrick showed him up, and we all saw it.
Yeah, I mean, he was going to get practice and scrimmages open for us punt by punt, and then got blocked. We'll come back. The face-off is next right here on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, the sports animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. We'll hit the face-off coming up in just a moment. Did you wake up with a little extra pep in your step with the Eve Pons news yesterday?
Absolutely. And I said it yesterday. Like, I knew I was being biased. I knew I was being selfish by really wanting Eve Pons to come back. But I really do feel like him making this investment one more year in college is going to pay just huge dividends. I do feel like it's going to boost his draft stock. He is going to... he's going to have the ball in his hands more to make plays. I just feel like he's going to be able to develop, and that's going to get him paid on the front end and hopefully maybe even help him skip the G League and some of those two-way contract deals.
Yeah, maybe so. So Eve Pons coming back to Tennessee. We'll continue to discuss that story. It's a big one with Tennessee basketball and the impact that it can make. Tennessee assistant basketball coach Mike Schwartz will join us coming up at 2 o'clock. Always great to have him on the show and get his perspective on what's going on behind the scenes. They're actually working out right now, so this afternoon we'll talk to him coming up at 2 o'clock. Before we hit the face-off, you ready for, I guess, the COVID quote of the day from your boy Gardner Minshew?
Oh, G-Money. Yeah, what did G-Money say?
Yeah, so he's been activated from the reserve COVID-19 list as he had been living with safety Andrew Wingard and wide receiver Michael Walker. And Walker, it turns out, had tested positive, so the other guys had to be quarantined on the reserve list until they passed their tests.
Yep.
And Minshew said, quote, "I did not contract the virus. It took one look at me and ran the other way." So Minshew went face-to-face with COVID-19 and won the duel.
I believe it. I believe in Gardner Minshew. And if he still has the mustache, of course COVID-19 ran away. That thing is intimidating.
I don't know if he's got a mustache or full beard now. I think some long hair. I don't know. But Gardner Minshew, the quarterback for now of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he has been removed from the reserve COVID-19 list. Let's hit today's face-off.
Want some? Come get some.
Head to head, toe to toe. Let's go one on one with today's face-off.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Presented by Fort Sanders Health and Fitness Center.
Are you ready?
Let's get this mother crock.
Alrighty, Joel, what do you have for us today?
Is Tennessee now the favorite to win the SEC with Eve Pons returning?
Yes, with him returning, the amount of experience they have, he's a really good player. I mean, he's the best defensive player coming back in the SEC, could be in the country, and everybody coming in. I think Tennessee would have had a case to be the favorite without Pons. With him, yes, ahead of Kentucky.
I think it's actually going to be a split vote. I think half the team is going to go with Tennessee, or half the coaches, and then half and media, and then the other half is going to go with Kentucky. So I think it's going to be a toss-up from the jump. Don't forget, Kentucky also signing the number one class in the country with 3 5-stars coming in. I mean, they're just going to keep reloading. So I think it'll be split to start off with.
Which college basketball team benefited the most from players withdrawing their names from the NBA draft?
Well, I do like what Jeff Borzello from ESPN pointed out earlier today. He said college basketball period wins with all of these people coming back. I think you can make a strong case for some different teams in the SEC, including Alabama, including Tennessee. But I think because this legitimately puts the Vols into one of those Elite Eight contending spots, it's got to be Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm going to go LSU. The depth of players returning, guys with experience coming back, and talent. I mean, you've got some legitimate prospects in there. Smart's now played a lot of basketball, and getting Watford and Darius Days back with him, I think that's big news for LSU. And you know, Will Wade, they're the jokes, but I think he's a pretty good coach, and that's a pretty good basketball team.
Do you buy Derek Jeter's defense of his players?
I enjoyed Derek Jeter's defense of his players. I like the idea of a player going out for some milk, but no, I think there's a little bit more to it. Maybe it's not as bad what they were doing or what led them to get the virus and then have it spread throughout the team, but milk and coffee, no, I think it goes beyond that. It's not just a latte afternoon here.
I think the point he was trying to make is nobody was pulling a Lou Williams and they didn't need wings from a strip club in Atlanta. So I totally bought what Jeter was selling. I'm not going to be a stickler for all of the little details, but I think he was just trying to present my team was being responsible, but just lacked in some discipline, and that's how he portrayed it.
Today is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. Is chocolate chip the goat of cookies?
I totally think it is, but this is a sign, Josh, of me getting old. The other day, I chose an oatmeal raisin cookie over a chocolate chip cookie. Both of them were in the freezer, and I was like, I'm going to go oatmeal raisin. It's awful.
Yeah, the defense rests. Do I even need to say anything after Heather just went up to the stand and admitted that she's not the winner of the face-off today? Chocolate chip is the goat. It's the Wayne Gretzky of cookies. It's just the obvious answer. It's the Jerry Rice among wide receivers of cookies. Chocolate chip all the way, every day.
Are you in or out on the new Bachelorette this season?
Wildly in. I was interested in what was going to go on with Claire's season, and the delay just adds intrigue. You wait a little bit longer, you're excited for it to come back. Tayshia is a winner. I think she's going to do a great job. She's stepping into the face-off with adversity, and I think she'll come out a big winner in the end. Plus, we're going to get some drama. They've already told us.
Yeah, I've got some questions about all of this. I'm going to be optimistically in on it because I do think Tayshia seems to be, like, she's going to be a great bachelorette, but I think there's a lot of fishiness going on behind the scenes. The fact that they had recast and they tried to make it like it was for Claire, I've got a lot of questions.
I realize that we ask 5 questions on the face-off, but much like LeBron in the first round of the NBA playoffs, that one was over after 4. Josh gets the win.
That's all
good.
Yeah,
that was like the Mets on opening day. I mean, that's all she wrote.
Yeah. I'm just telling you, things change in life, and your taste evolves, and it grows, and maybe one day y'all will experience that. I recognize chocolate chip is great. I did say they were the goat of all cookies. I just said that now I'm not all in on chocolate chip.
Well, as your taste buds continue to decline, we'll let you know what good cookies taste like.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'll give you some reminders over here with some operating taste buds. But if you tried to make a case for like an Oreo or a white chocolate macadamia, all good. I mean, I would accept those arguments. But the oatmeal raisin head-to-head with the chocolate chip cookie is a losing effort every time. I'll take the win on the face-off here to close out hour number one. Happy National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day to everybody out there. The Oreo is one that I think maybe makes the best case because of its specialty, its appreciation. You can go with the double Oreo. That can be a real case. But if you take like the best chocolate chip cookie, there isn't anything that stands up to it. I don't think the best Oreo cannot match the best chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, my whole working idea on the Oreo is the best store-bought cookie. Like, nothing trumps it. Like, if you are going to the cookie aisle, not the bakery, but the cookie aisle, and you're picking out a packaged cookie, the Oreo is definitely the one to pick. But if you're in the bakery or something, 9 times out of 10, you're choosing the chocolate chip. The little mini ones from Trader Joe's, dangerous.
Yeah, what tries to challenge, it's just, you're kind of following the lead, is the M&M cookie. Yeah, because you get the M&Ms, which have chocolate in the cookie, but yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah, I'm out on the M&M. When I was a kid, it was great because it was combining both worlds, cookies and candy, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is the best. But no, as an adult, not going to happen.
Yep. Also, chocolate chip ice cream sandwich cookies. Also good. We'll come back. 2 hours of Sports 180 to go. Good news for Tennessee. Eve Pons is back. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about all the developments in the sports world this afternoon and keep you up to date on what's going on with sports live today here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.